Hello, and welcome to a special episode of Mission Critical, a podcast where we explore the real stories behind modern entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Lance Chung, and today I am so thrilled to be joined by Leslie Hampton, an Indigenous fashion designer, small business owner, an entrepreneur who has challenged the way we think about the clothes we buy and wear. This episode is made possible by MasterCard, who, as we do, believe that when small business wins, everyone wins. They recognize that small businesses aren't just economic engines, they're cultural drivers, community builders, and sources of meaningful connection. That's why MasterCard supports small business owners at every stage of their journey by understanding their unique needs and building tailored solutions to help them grow and stay protected in today's digital economy. Now, whether it's supporting designers like Leslie Hampton or launching a product from your living room, today's entrepreneurs are creating businesses that reflect who they are and what their communities need. MasterCard is proud to be a part of that journey. So with that, let's dive into Leslie's journey. This is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Hi, Leslie. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. First of all, you are a vision. This outfit is fantastic. Tell me a little bit more about it.
Thank you. This is our brocade suit, brocade trench coat.
Yes.
And that is from our 2025 collection.
I love a matching set too.
Like, me
too. It is stunning. Thank you so much for coming in to chat with us. I've been a fan of yours for as long as I've seen, like, or been exposed to your work and seen, like, obviously, in the industry, our community, and we've also had the chance to meet at a few different events too, which has been so lovely. So thank you for taking the time to come sit with us and just to talk about your whole story.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here.
Okay, let's just start off how we usually like to just ask everyone, all our guests, if you can introduce yourself and, like, what's your thesis or what's your perspective on your craft?
Mm-hmm. So, Anin, Leslie Hampton, Indigenikas, Tomogamy First Nation, and Ndonjiba. Hello, my name is Leslie Hampton. I am a member of Tomogamy First Nation, located in Northern Ontario, currently reside in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm an artist and fashion designer, and my Indigenous-owned, women-led, size-inclusive brand focuses on mental wellness and body neutrality in fashion through the lens of the Indigenous worldview. So we focus on building community within fashion, focusing on sustainability practices when it comes to making our clothing, and really to include everyone and celebrate everyone in the fashion industry.
Yeah, I love that. And I really feel like there's just so many incredible, like, especially within the Indigenous space, like, so many incredible designers and talents that are finally getting the visibility and the space. And obviously there's so much more space that needs to be created, but it's so great to see just, like, the diversity of different talent as well that's coming up through creative spaces. And so I'm so happy to have you here. So you become one of the more recognizable designers in Canada, especially with your work seen on, like, red carpets, runways, global stages, TV shows like Miss Kelly Clarkson. What was a moment or turning point that made you realize that you wanted to build your own fashion brand? Because it's a tough gig, for sure. So what was the moment where you kind of chose to go down that path?
Yeah, so I would say it happened when I was in university. I went to the University of Toronto for art studio and art history. And I went the more academic route because I didn't really see myself within the fashion space. There were no Indigenous designers that I could really see taking up space. There was no designers that were celebrating inclusivity and plus size fashion. So as a curvy Indigenous person, I really just didn't see a space for myself. So I wasn't sure that that was a career choice that I could do. And then while I was in university, I was doing kind of all the fine arts, sculpture, photography, drawing, and all of those assignments that I had in school were all ending up to be a conversation about the body and how what you put on the body, how you present the body, that conversation that you can create by doing that. And I was always making, it ended up just being wearable art pieces and things that I wanted to see on the runway, and I wanted to push that story forward. So it was almost a natural jump over into fashion, and I was so eager by the end of my university degree to really push and try to shake up the industry, that I started at George Brown College after that, and I started my brand the first week I started fashion school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Just, like, dive into the deep end.
Just dive dive in, yeah. taking what I was learning in my classes during the day, bringing them to my collections in the evening time. Mm. I was skipping out on class to take calls with Fashion Art Toronto. I was invited to Vancouver Fashion Week within that first semester of fashion school. Wow. And it was the collection that I showcased in that at Vancouver Fashion Week that ended up being in Vogue Runway. And I was actually able to see diverse bodies and my designs in Vogue. And having that happen so early on in my career, I knew there was like a hunger and a need for it. So it just kind of pushed me forward.
It just goes to show that, like, there, even within your first semester, like, and the amount of support and outreach, that there was a definite need and a hunger for diverse voices. It's also crazy to think that, like, it wasn't really that long ago when, like, words like inclusivity and size inclusivity and all that kind of stuff were not really part of the regular dialogue that has been a bit more normalized now. And the fact that that wasn't even something that we had, you know, that you could see represented on mm-hmm. in pages of magazines and screens. And just when you think about it, like, it wasn't that long ago. And now, and then you've made the change for your, like, you didn't see it. So you made the change for yourself.
Exactly. I started in 2016, so it was less than a decade ago. Yeah. So to be able to see the changes that have happened within the fashion industry, not only locally, like in Canada and Toronto, but also internationally, and seeing people just be more educated when it comes to what fashion that they can celebrate and wear and put on their bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, your identity as, like, a member of the Anishinaabe First Nations, as a woman, as someone who grew up between cultures, it's very intersectional and deeply kind of informs your work. How has that shaped your voice as both a designer and an entrepreneur? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm the daughter of a 60 Scoop survivor. So my family lineage, my mom didn't grow up kind of in community, and she grew up in a non-Indigenous family. Mm-hmm. And then because of the career that my parents chose, it took me internationally for a lot of my youth. So I only came back to Canada when I was 18. I always knew that I was Indigenous, but I didn't really, it was hard to learn and discover what that meant, because I was living in Australia in my early teens, and I was trying to say I'm Indigenous and I'm so proud, but to be an Indigenous person in Australia kind of meant very, like, similar struggles, but it was very different for someone who was 12 years old trying to figure it out. So it was really only when I came back to Canada at 18 that I was able to go visit Temagami First Nation and go back to my reserve, reconnect with my birth grandmother, and really begin that learning and that healing for myself as well, and for my mom and my family.
I mean, did that experience of living in different places and experiencing different cultures and different perspectives, did that help you in any way in terms of your self-discovery and your identity? Like, obviously, you weren't in Canada to really tap into your roots directly, but how did it actually kind of help open your mind or even challenge the ways that you think about your identity as an individual?
Yes, 100%. When I was living in Australia, I was at a boarding school, and I was the only American kid in basically the whole town. So it was very hard to feel like I was included in any sort of way, because it was very obvious that I was the odd one out. Even as soon as I opened my mouth, it was a different accent. Yes. It was just so different in so many ways that I really understood what it was like to be excluded from areas. And then on the flip side, another place that I lived was England, and I went to an international school there. So all the students were from all these different locations, all these different backgrounds, and we were all celebrated and included because we were so different. So I developed that sense of community from being diverse. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really kind of give a nod to when I bring it into my fashion career, where I want everyone to be celebrated for their differences and to create that community aspect, because we are all different.
Yeah, and that's almost been like a through line through your work, is celebrating the diversity and inclusion. And also, like, down to your roots of, like, well, I guess this would have been after you moved back to Canada, but, like, the thesis of your work in terms of wanting more representation, wanting more inclusivity, and whether that's, like, size or culture reflected in the fashion industry.
Exactly, because even as a curvy Indigenous person, didn't see myself in those spaces. So I wanted to create that for myself, and then communicating more with my community and seeing that we have similar struggles, even from someone who didn't grow up on reserve to my friends that did grow up on reserve. We all have that same struggle of not seeing us in these mainstream spaces.
Yeah. You know, when it comes to the fashion industry, it's such an interesting industry because it allows you to, you know, it allows self-expression, but in many ways it also kind of restricts how we communicate or has traditionally restricted. And the industry itself to operate in it can be a lot of guardrails and a lot of gated closed doors. What are some outdated rules that you've had to break to make space for yourself and others within an industry as institutional as fashion?
Yeah, I have so many examples, unfortunately, of when there was hesitation or pushback when I wanted to bring inclusivity into the fashion scene. I had plus size models stopped at backstage doors of runway shows and not permitted backstage because they didn't look like models. And I had to stop what I was doing, prepping for the show, go to the security and say, no, let them in. So there's moments like that.
The audacity.
They were on lists and they still just didn't look like models, so they weren't permitted in.
Wow.
I had an amputee model on one of my runway shows, and she was testing the traction of her prosthetic limb on the runway vinyl, and she got basically yelled at by the showrunner and to say, come on, hurry up, like you're slowing down. And there's just so many ways where people are so used to a structure. And when we go beyond that structure and want to permit more bodies into this space, there's that pushback that is almost like a microaggression because they aren't aware that they're doing it and they're so used to it being one way. When it diversifies, it's a learning curve for everyone.
It's interesting when you think of institutional industries like fashion, and it just people kind of almost come to accept the things as they are because they've been that way for so long. We had an interesting chat with Dr. Ben Berry, who's the dean at Parsons.
I love Ben.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because we had that chat around the time of the Met Gala. Mm. And you know, his perspective is really, a lot of that has been focused on accessibility. And when you think about something like the Met Gala and like those huge stairs, mm-hmm. and from an accessibility standpoint, if you're not able to like walk up the stairs, then you're basically ushered to the back door, and then that's how you enter the venue. Like, it's like rethinking something as simple as, or what might be to many people as simple as, like going up those like kind of like iconic stairs at the Met Gala, and understanding like how, from an accessibility standpoint and a representational standpoint, something so that seems so normalized is needs, all these things need to be reconsidered.
Exactly. And it's something that we used to celebrate, but then if we think a little more on it, what are we really celebrating?
Yeah. How would you say, as you've evolved as an entrepreneur and a designer, that your definition of success has changed from like that first semester to where you are today?
Absolutely. When I started, I wanted that who are you wearing on the red carpet. I wanted the press stories. Mm-hmm. I really loved and got really excited every time we went viral for some moment. We went viral a few times early on in the career, in the brand, whether it was like a hairstyle we chose or when we brought in inclusivity. Every time we brought and casted a model that was diverse, it always became a major news story. Right. So those were really kind of what fueled me and made me very excited for what I was doing, but those were kind of like the pat on the back, like, okay, I made it moments. And these days it's transitioned to just being able to create and see a smile on my clients' faces when they put on my garments and then also the selling of those garments, being able to support me and my family.
Yeah. What do you think fueled that change in perspective over the course of your career?
Oh, I would say that change really came just with me growing up as a person and as an individual, and knowing that these media stories are great, but it's really that personal communication, that personal impact that I have for someone that's really going to push me forward at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any advice for other founders who are trying to build something, you know, meaningful for themselves without following kind of like the traditional or like institutional path, the path kind of less walked and discovered?
Yeah, my biggest piece of advice for up-and-coming designers or entrepreneurs would be, don't be afraid to reach out to that dream client or that goal person that you want to kind of shoot for the stars for. Yeah. A lot of the major moments that I had in my career have just been a DM on Instagram or an email at 2 a.m. while I'm like daydreaming of what could be. Mm-hmm. That's how we got to dress Lizzo during COVID. And that's Lily Gladstone slid into our DMs when she was finding her dress for the Cannes Film Festival. So it's very interesting, the power of social media that we have now that we didn't necessarily have when I started in 2016.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree that just asking for opportunity, even if you think it's like completely out of your grasp, the worst that's going to happen is that you won't hear back or you'll get a no, and then you'll just be in the same spot that you were before you asked. But the best thing that could happen is that it could open up so many doors, and you just don't know the power of just a simple message. Like, it could completely change the trajectory of your business if you do that outreach and open those doors and be open to connecting with different people.
Exactly. And I think there's definitely barriers are being broken down where we don't have to go through a stylist anymore. A lot of these major celebrities are kind of doing the research for themselves and knowing that they want to represent, say, Indigenous fashion. If they know that's a goal of theirs, they'll do the work or have their team do the work as well. When Lily Gladstone was on the cover of Vogue magazine, it was her directing the stylist to reach out to Indigenous designers to submit work for the cover. And that has never been something really that me as a designer, I've never received an email from Vogue like that before. So to have someone on the inside really pushing for that change is how we're going to move forward.
Yeah, that's incredible. I remember hearing a similar story about Lily with Jen Harper at Cheekbone and how she advocated to her makeup artist to use Indigenous brands for, I think it was like Oscar's red carpet or something, like something big. But it takes that kind of advocacy from the inside to also kind of make sure that change is happening as well, right?
Exactly. I think, breaking down those barriers on the inside, sometimes you kind of have to go with the flow for a bit just so you can get into the doors and then you break it down.
Yeah, absolutely. As someone who has started independently, also got a lot of opportunities right when you kind of put out the intention to be a designer and scales your business in a very challenging industry where there's a lot of changes happening as well constantly, what kind of support has meant the most to you or has made the biggest difference for you as someone that continues to scale and also just be agile in like a fast-moving industry?
Mm-hmm. I think finding the right mentors was so crucial for me to be either mentioned in rooms that I wasn't in yet or to be put into rooms that I wasn't really invited into yet. Mm-hmm. Sage Paul, who is the founder of Indigenous Fashion Arts Festival, earlier on in the foundation of the Indigenous Fashion Arts Festival, she created a impact-based kind of workshop for Indigenous designers to really see themselves within the fashion industry, yes, but to know and educate us on what value we're bringing. And that's really kind of where I discovered that these barriers and these gatekeeping is very much a colonial concept, and it's not something that's like innate within Indigenous people. So to have that mentorship of someone who's so aware of the fashion industry really allowed me to know that there is a place for me and to know that there's this community that's ready to celebrate me, and then the mainstream industry might pick it up after.
Yeah, and just like resource and knowledge sharing within the community, I find, especially within the small business community, I feel at least in Canada and in Toronto, at least, like the overall sentiment is like a very, very much in the spirit of like collaboration. Mm-hmm. Like, let's see us all win because there's still space. There is always going to be space for everyone to do well. And if we can all come up together, then that's better for the overall ecosystem too, 100%. Right?
Yeah.
So we're working with MasterCard to present a few episodes of our podcast, and you're very familiar with them as well.
Yes.
They support small businesses at every stage of their business along their journey. Why is access to resources, especially financial support, so important support business, small business owners, especially if they're women and Indigenous entrepreneurs as well.
Yeah, I'm so thankful for MasterCard and Pier 5 for the grant and that they gave us. And it wasn't only the financial support, but it was also the community that they invited us into. Yeah. So Pier 5 does great supporting entrepreneurs when it comes to our mental health as well as the business side of it. And that's something that, especially for me, when I was hustling so many years, In the early days, I put my mental health on the back burner, and it was really hard to focus on that and focus on me and then also focus on Leslie Hampton, the brand. Mm-hmm. So to be able to learn the balance within all that is something that is so great when you're able to connect with other entrepreneurs, and Pier 5 and MasterCard really allow you that community and mentorship.
What does mental well-being look like to you today? Like, how do you define that through the lens of entrepreneurship and as a business owner?
Yeah, I would definitely say that boundaries is a huge one. To be able to make a separation between, like I said, me, Leslie Hampton, the brand, and then me, Leslie, the person.
Definitely.
So to have boundaries within those two almost lives, to give myself a weekend, to focus on my physical health, focus on my mental health, to do therapy, to reconnect with my family, all those different aspects really allow me to balance myself. And I always say that my business isn't thriving unless I'm thriving. So if I'm not doing well, the business isn't really that successful.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, when I feel great, then the business is doing great.
It's like that oxygen mask.
Exactly.
Analogy where you have to put the oxygen mask, I guess in this instance, like your well-being, in order to support the whole, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And we're doing such major changes when it comes to breaking down barriers, bringing inclusivity into fashion, that's really hard work. And it's yeah. more than just creating clothing. It's really changing just an industry,
a narrative
in an industry. So to make sure that you're good because you're representing so much is so important.
That is true, because like, I mean, operating a business in and of itself can be so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, if you're trying to change community and culture,
yeah.
that is like another thing on your shoulders that can take such an emotional toll.
Exactly.
And yeah, just being able to carve out and be intentional about carving out space for the mental well-being is just, it's so important. Did you ever feel, was there ever a point where you felt guilty about making that time and that energy for yourself and like taking time off in order to help yourself in order to then become back energized? Was that ever a thing that you...
I got to the point where it wasn't a choice. It wasn't a choice to start thinking about myself. I was like just not doing that great. And it's interesting, especially when this is such like a public facing industry, that you can put on a mask and you can put on the fancy dress and still not feel good on the inside. So
it's literally your namesake too.
Exactly.
Like you can't even separate it necessarily.
100%. So you really need to focus on all those aspects. And for myself, I had to take that little bit of time off. And
yeah.
Lucky in a weird way that it happened around the same time COVID did. So the whole world kind of permitted me to
yes.
take a break. Yeah. But it was really that time that so many things shifted in my life. And I got a therapist, and I was able to take a year of sobriety. And there's so many aspects that getting caught up in the fashion industry might be one thing, but to get caught up in taking care of yourself and having you thrive is so
yeah.
important.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything that you think that people misunderstand about the role that small businesses play within the broader economy, but also the cultural conversation? Do you ever feel like people kind of downplay the role that small businesses have, or like the opposite?
I think people who are educated in the impact of small businesses definitely don't downplay that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something to be said about that personal connection when people are purchasing on our website. The notification comes to my phone and I'm the one receiving it and doing a happy dance when I receive
yeah.
an order.
Yeah.
Or when someone is coming in for a fitting, it's often me or my close team members who are doing the fitting with them. So we're personally, it's that personal connection that we have with our clients. And that's something that we really don't see when we shop at a major box store, that it's that personal connection is not there as much.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess building on that, how would you define your community in terms of like the Leslie Hampton community? And you know whether that's like through how you've built it and cultivated it through like casting, storytelling, mentorship, your clientele. What does ultimately your community mean to you, and who is part of that community?
Yeah. What's interesting is that because we started when modeling agencies didn't have all the talent that we wanted to represent, a lot of our casting was street casted. So it was quote unquote regular people who were either our clients or then became our clients because we had them in our runway shows. So it's this weird mix where it's not really separated between like community when it comes to the model side and then community when it comes to the client side. They're all kind of one, and it's this beautiful woman or individual who really wants to feel celebrated when they put on their clothing and celebrated and being part of something bigger. And I can really see that when it comes to our runway shows, when it comes to clients who wear our work. We had some interviews happen backstage at our most recent show at Fashion Art Toronto, and the models were asked, what are you so excited, like what makes you most excited about being here? And they really said representing Indigenous fashion and representing Indigenous people. And they were an Indigenous person who didn't see themselves in these spaces, and to be able to be at a major fashion week and not only be an Indigenous person who might be curvy and taking up space, but then to be wearing Indigenous fashion is just such a major impact point that my clients, Indigenous or not, really take that with them.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of clients that who wear your work, you worked with, you mentioned Lily Gladstone, who's incredible and an advocate for, has advocated for Indigenous representation in so many incredible ways. What does it feel like to see your work, you know, serve as both fashion, like just on its own, a great piece, a great skirt, a great set, but also a vessel for activism too?
Yeah, it's so important because fashion is something that people often see when you first walk into the door. And it's something that you as an individual, it's the first choice you make at the beginning of every day. So to have that personal connection with these people who are putting clothing onto their bodies and putting basically that story onto their bodies is so intimate, and it's so crucial because they understand the importance of that story that they're putting out into the world. And I really saw that when Sandra Oh wore our pieces for the Order of Canada, for her Order of Canada ceremony, and she discovered us just a month before, and she's like, that's the suit I need to wear. And it was this incredible two-tone suit with Indigenous beadwork along the collar. And not only was it a great piece that could be like on a best dress list, but it had so many layers of storytelling within it. And then for someone like Sandra to know that and want to represent that, and for the Order of Canada wearing Indigenous fashion is so impactful.
That speaks volumes and has so many layers to it. She seems like a real one.
who's like
on your like wish list for people that you'd love to dress, like let's say top three. Manifest it.
Throughout my whole career, it's always been Ashley Graham. She's such an advocate for bringing inclusivity into fashion, and she's doing great things even now, transitioning from being supermodel to motherhood and just navigating that transition. I would say number two would probably be Halsey, the singer. And I resonate with her story so much. And I've been a fan for so long. But her most recent struggle with leukemia and really kind of just having the strength to overcome that and then go on a massive world tour after. My mom actually had leukemia when she was in her early 20s, so I just really resonate with that strength and that struggle.
All right, so we're manifesting Halsey and Ashley out in the world. You're gonna dress them maybe in 2025 even.
Who knows? I'll send that DM on Instagram.
Exactly. Ask for the opportunity, right? Exactly. You never know. Has your community ever pushed you to think differently about the way you approach your work or show up as a designer? Like, how have they challenged you in good ways?
Yeah, I definitely think the Indigenous community, as well as the inclusive fashion industry, definitely keep you accountable when it comes to who you're representing and how you're representing yourself. Mm-hmm. I think it is so important to do it in a good way and not just because I'm an Indigenous designer, yeah, not bring Indigenous motifs that I have not received the teachings for.
Yeah.
So I think in that way, it's very crucial to know just the education behind the work that you're putting out there. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think of a collaboration that we did with Scott Wobbenow in 2020. And that was so massive because as Scott grew up on the reserve, he had those teachings. So we collaborated on an item that between his cultural background and my fashion business background, we were able to collaborate on a beautiful piece that so many people resonated with.
And is authentic and organic and true to kind of the perspectives of the people involved.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that was his first launch into the fashion industry. And then he transitioned to releasing a collection at New York Fashion Week. So it's really great not only to have these moments as designers to come together and collaborate, but also to do that mentorship, mm-hmm, and have that mentorship be two ways.
Yeah. And stump for your friends and see them do well too. Right?
Exactly.
Like, that's so exciting to see. You know, your brand is literally your namesake, and the culture that we're in terms of the entrepreneurial landscape is that so many brands and companies who are like founder-led, those founders are very upfront, visible, and it's almost like an expectation now, especially on social media, for founders to be very visible and talk about their journey, good or bad. Do you find, like, how comfortable are you with being transparent about your story and sharing all the good, bad, and ugly of building your business?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that within your comfort zone, or do you find that that is something that you naturally gravitate towards in terms of building out your or telling your story?
Yeah, Early on, I was very selective with the parts of my story that I was telling and sharing. Mm-hmm. But I also started my brand when I was 22. So I was still a kid in these rooms with really successful people, and I had to put on a front, and I had had a lot of imposter syndrome when it came to how I represented myself, because I was always the youngest person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I'm a little older and I can almost be a mentor to that up and coming designer, that up and coming talent, that's kind of pushing me now to be able to share my story more and share, yes, the highs, but also the lows. And like you were talking about social media, I think the idea of a personal brand, as well as, yes, the business brand, but I think that idea of a personal brand is where clients will feel connected to us, where our community will be able to support us in that way, and that's really kind of where people want to see that celebration of story.
Yeah, when you talk about mentorship, what is, like, if someone's approaching you and like, I really want some insight into the industry, or I just don't know what to do, what is, like, the best piece of advice that you find yourself giving on repeat to people that come up to you and ask you for advice?
Yeah, probably don't be afraid to say no. There's so many opportunities out there, especially in a big city like Toronto. And if you're not in a big city, there's so many opportunities online to be able to connect and converse with people. I think that is so important when it comes to kind of nurturing the next generation of talent. And also just to have those opportunities when we are kind of an established brand. We offer a number of internships at my brand, and we have an incredible George Brown student who just completed her internship, and now she's hired onto the team. So to see that transition and to bring her into rooms that at 19 years old you don't have access to, it's really cool.
Yeah, totally. You know, programs like the MasterCard Small Business Fund, they really try to create networks of support and mentorship. You talked about kind of being able to meet other entrepreneurs through your experience. Why do you believe mentorship is so essential? Is it something that also, like, do you think that people downplay it? Do you think people actually do recognize the value of it in terms of the general discourse? What role do you think it plays in, and why is it so important?
Mm-hmm. I think when entrepreneurs are struggling and having that community of someone who's had the same struggle or someone you can reach out to and say, hey, I have this very unique niche question. Can you help me answer it? Mm-hmm. I think that's very important, a very important reason we need that community. And like the MasterCard Peer 5 grant, they kept the cohort so small that we weren't lost in the sea of entrepreneurs. They were very selective when they picked out what entrepreneurs to work with. Mm-hmm. And we were able to really connect personally and really understand each other's struggles, whether they were a baker or a designer. We had the same issues with growing the brand and growing the business. So that's very interesting. And it's just great ways to connect with people.
Yeah, yeah. As someone who, you know, the way that your business operates, you have obviously an outlet where you have to be creative in terms of how you're building out your designs and everything. And there's an artistry to it and a craftsmanship to it. But then there's also the business side.
Yeah.
How do you navigate those two things? Do you find that you're good at like going back and forth between the two and like switching one or two or one brain off and the other part on? Or what is your experience like navigating them?
Yeah, it definitely comes in seasons for me. So whether or not we're focusing on the sales or focusing on the creation, those really have to be seasons and moments to allow, especially for creative flow. It won't always happen if you're stressed out about your bottom line or your cash flow. So
to have a million things going on.
Exactly. So to have that separation is very important for me. When we started, I was doing two collections a year because that's what the fashion calendar told you to do as a designer. Mm-hmm. And I got to the point, I did a number of collections, but I was getting burnt out and we weren't able to focus on all the aspects. And especially at that time, I say we, but it was really just me working on it. So I do one collection a year now. We do a lot of customs for clients and things like that to allow that in between the collection launch to allow that creative flow. But to have that moment for creating when maybe sales are slower and the business is slower, and then to have that sales season where people can actually interact with the work because we have it created, made, and ready to put on people's bodies.
What do you find informs your creative direction and like inspiration behind when you're putting like a collection together? Like, do you go to the kind of like the same kind of sources for inspiration, whether that's like nature or whatever it might be? Like, where do you find your creativity?
Yeah, travel is a big one for me because it resonates so much with me and how I grew up. Mm-hmm. I always feel the most free when I'm sitting on a plane. So as long as I can travel every once in a while, I think that really expands my mind. And that sense of escapism is such a great way for me to get into that creative flow. But I'm also very inspired around the people around me. A lot of our collections that we have released throughout the years have been inspired by the people closest to me, whether it's a reconnection journey that me and my mom are embarking on, or whether it's a mental health struggle that one of my peers has experienced. Those really, they inform me on how I want to create a story to put out into the world and lead to that sense of inclusivity for everyone, because we all struggle with the same things.
Yeah, it's true. It's a through line, regardless of what your business is about.
Exactly.
You know, as someone who's built a brand from the based off of like vision and values and not just, you know, trends, which is such a big part of the fashion industry. Mm-hmm. How do you think the role of the founder is evolving, and what excites you about that evolution of that role?
Yeah, I think designers back in the day, we were kind of during a runway show, you would see them for maybe 2 seconds as they pop out, do their little wave and run backstage again.
Yeah.
And I think what's really interesting now is people want to hear from us. They want us to be that thought leader when it comes to what we're putting into our fashion brand, because it's not just clothing. It's the ideas and the impact that we're trying to create with the brand, because there are so many brands out there and it's very oversaturated in a fashion industry market. So it's what sets us apart and how do we communicate that with the world.
Yeah, yeah. And what excites you the most about the future of Indigenous talent in general, whether it's a fashion designer or a stylist or a makeup artist, like within kind of your industry, but also what you've seen from an intersectional standpoint across other industries, what excites you the most?
Ooh, I think what excites me most about that is that people are really seeing the appreciation of Indigenous-made work or Indigenous-led projects. So we can see that with North of North. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Anna Lamb is such an incredible lead, and she's been acting for years, but she's finally getting her moment because it's no longer a niche topic. So to see these incredibly talented Indigenous individuals taking up space in the mainstream market, but not just because they're Indigenous, but because they are so talented.
Yeah.
And because we've broken down those barriers or continuing to break down those barriers, people just understand that the talent is there and it's not just a niche topic. A lot of my career, Indigenous fashion, it was always a niche, but we are fashion, and we are the first fashion that was on this land of North America, so we should have been included in these spaces long ago.
Yeah.
So the fact that we are being included now, and you can see not only Indigenous fashion weeks, but you can see fashion designers like Ocean Kiana or Lindsay King taking up space in mainstream fashion shows and mainstream fashion weeks, that's where we want to see it going.
Getting the Vogue features, getting on the red carpets, like the TV shows and everything, just regardless of their identities, but also because that, like, it's just because of talent too,
because of the caliber of their work. Absolutely.
Yeah. What I also, just from my perspective too, which I think has been so beautiful to see, is that I feel like because more stories have been told, there is there's a bigger diversity of stories being told in terms of Indigenous storytelling, not just being a monolith. It's, you know, you have Anna telling stories about the Inuit community. You have such a spectrum of diverse communities within the Indigenous community. And that, I think, is also beautiful because it's not a monolith. There's so many nuances and differences between communities and cultures that people have not realized that are not part of the who have not been part of the community, right?
Exactly. And if we look at, like, media that everyone is kind of grew up with, we see the Pocahontas, Disney's Pocahontas, and that's kind of a lot of the framework that people had for the representation of Indigenous people. But there are so many people who grew up in cities, so many Indigenous people who might have, like myself, grown up internationally, and we have all these different stories, but we are all Indigenous people, and we want to represent that in so many different ways.
Yeah. As your platform grows, how do you remind yourself of, or even just as the, you know, when you go through the motions of the journey of an entrepreneur, good and bad, how do you stay grounded? How do you remind yourself of, like, your thesis and your perspective and your values?
Yeah, I would say if I'm not getting lost in the mix, I can definitely stay true to my ethos. If I'm stuck in the hustle too much, it's not forgotten, but it's almost put on the back burner because I'm trying to think of the bottom line and all those business aspects of just building a brand in itself. But to stay grounded, I really give a nod to my family and to my partner. They don't kind of hype anything up a little, like, too much. So yeah, it's great to have these awards or to have these media mentions, but at the end of the day, we come home, we have dinner together.
Keep me humble.
Exactly. And I, especially for entrepreneurs or people who are trying to do such big things within industries, to stay humble and to stay true to how you started and true to what you believe in is definitely what my family does for me.
And it's I think in the entrepreneurial community too, you see a lot of big splashy headlines, you know, with entrepreneurs like selling their business for millions or billions of dollars or this award or this and that, and it's like it almost can feel like a rat race, but then just kind of bringing yourself back to, like, your 2 feet on the ground and, like, the people around you and being reminded about like the importance of humility too as an entrepreneur.
Exactly. And specifically in fashion or media in general, it is such a rat race, such a competition, that you do have to kind of look inward and remind yourself that you are separate from the brand. And it's great to be successful and have those headlines and have those things, but at the end of the day, who are you coming home to? How do you feel when you come home? Those are the things that keep me grounded, keep me going.
Yeah, that's important. Leslie, I've loved our chat. This has been so wonderful, like, just learning about your story and just your perspective and just I just loved also following your story on social media and just seeing how, one, just like the designs are incredible, and also two, just seeing the joy and celebration that people have from how they feel when they wear mm-hmm. your product. Like, I can tell just from the pride that they have when they're wearing your dresses and your skirts and your jackets. Yeah, it's really cool to see.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so exciting to empower people with what we put on their bodies, and they're telling such great stories. So to be a part of their journey is so exciting for me.
Love that. Well, thank you so much for your time.
McRitch, thank you for having me.
Whether you're building something on your own, supporting someone who is, or dreaming of taking that first step, we hope you're walking away feeling inspired, energized, and connected. We invite you to take the next step by joining the MasterCard Small Business Community, which provides small business owners the opportunity to learn, grow, and connect with MasterCard and its partners, plus gain access to events and resources to help manage and expand your business. You can sign up at mastercard.ca/smallbusiness and become part of a network that's as ambitious and purpose-driven as you are.